So the term cultural war then is actually an accurate portrayal of what's going on. Some American political commentators have commented that what we're in is the culture wars.
Well, let's put it this way. Culture is now the battlefield of the ongoing war ever since the fall between Satan and God. Ever since the fall of Adam and Eve, Satan has been fighting God for the damnation or salvation of souls. And that's what's behind the culture war today. What you've got is the feeble remainder of Christians defending, or quasi-Christians, or implicit Christians, or sympathizing with Christians, defending the remains of Christian culture against the tremendous onslaught, a satanic onslaught by the enemies of God, who are fighting now to get rid of God completely out of the world, and who think they have victory within their grasp, and who want to introduce a completely godless new world order.
Well, it's interesting that the attack on the church in Germany under Otto von Bismarck was termed exactly that. The English translation was culture war too.
Culture struggle, yes. Kulturkampf. Yes. Kultur is more in German. It means more civilization. Well, again, it's in a general sense. But it's true that today culture is the battlefield, because religion has sort of been wiped out. But what remains of religion is a number still of decent instincts, with a number of decent people defending the cultural remains of Christendom. And the enemies of God want every last trace of Christendom gone, and so they're fighting to get rid of even the remains of Christian culture. Like, for instance, Shakespeare, the teaching of Shakespeare. One of the remains of Christian culture. And the liberals and the Freemasons and the governors are fighting to get rid of every last trace of Jesus Christ.
Now, if what we have here is an anti-culture in that sense, that it's against God,
yes,
can traditional Catholics then remain in this culture? There's the $64,000 question. Where does this leave us?
If traditional Catholics are living in a modern big city, with modern big city ways, in a big city environment, it's difficult to keep the faith. It's difficult, if not very difficult, to keep the faith, because there is a very hard, but apparently feelingly soft, 24/7 pressure to go with the flow, to go with the Freemasonic Antichrist governor's flow towards a completely new world order, a new godless world order. It's a very strong pressure. It makes itself felt in all kinds of ways, and especially in the culture, in the way people dress, in the way people work, in their office environment, in their companions in the office, the kind of people you have in the office, the way people talk in the office. As you say, their only interest is the vacation and the weekend. It's a 24/7 environment of people going along with this drive towards a godless world order. And it takes many forms. It's the dress, it's the shoes, it's the food, it's the music, it's the newspapers, it's the television, it's the politicians, it's the traffic, it's the... you name it as a feature of modern life, and it's part of this tremendous drift. It's this riptide, which is, you know, cutting people's legs from under them and carrying them away towards death and damnation, quite honestly, towards a satanic replacement of what used to be Christian civilization.
Well, my experience of living in Toronto, which is Canada's biggest city, is that it's perhaps even a little bit worse than that, because this modern culture is intrusive. In other words, it intrudes right in. You have people constantly knocking on the door and phoning you, And if you have children, it's obvious that they're going to be immersed in this culture when they play with the neighbors.
Yes. I completely understand, I completely imagine that. And some people, of course, they're driven to keep their children in their just within the limits of their own yard, which is very unnatural for children. Children need to play with other children and run around and shout and kick and scream and get stomped on by dad, you know, and get bring them back in line. All of that children need, and it's very difficult in today's environment. Because in the children of my neighbor today are liable to be using horrific language, which adults didn't use even 10, 20, 30 years back. But the children are into everything now. They don't, of course, know all that they're into, but they're into it. Whether they know exactly what it all means or not, whether they don't have the intention as evil as what it is that they're saying and what's coming out of their mouths. But if I want to keep my children out of that, I have to keep them in my own yard. It makes one think of Sodom and Gomorrah, where you may remember that Sodom, the Sodomites came banging on Lot's door to insist on being able to get out the handsome young men that seemed to be visiting Lot. So,
well, we have that in our cities, like the culture is actually intrusive.
Yes. Well, I believe it. And it may be the time for families to pull out of these cities if they possibly can. But of course, that's easier said than done. It's no use being under any illusion about how easy it is to get out to the country. Because where's dad going to find work out in the country? Of course, where there's a will, there's a way. But again, the country life is much harder than, well, it's harder than city life. There's a reason why people flock to the cities. It's a softer and easier life.
But in a way, wasn't that a seduction?
Yes, it was a seduction. I think Michael Matt's grandfather, who was then editing The Remnant, Walter Matt's father, I think in the 1930s was used to visit people in the country in Minnesota to try to persuade them to stay in the country. I think something like that. There was a push to get people to stay in the country and not come into the city. And there was a back to the land movement before the Second World War. I don't know if there's been much of a back to the land movement since, but it always makes sense to, but it's not easy. It's easier said than done. If a man wants to take his family back out into the country, he's got to think and think hard about how he's going to do it. But in itself, the life is much saner, and he's got more chance of being able to protect his children out in the country than in any big city today.
Well, you take, let's say, the example of one of our traditional families living in the city. This family will go to Mass on Sunday and be in that lovely Catholic environment,
yeah.
But then they have to come back,
yeah,
for the next whole week,
yeah,
and be surrounded and immersed in what can easily be called a sewer culture.
Yes.
Now, can you stay in a sewer culture, even if it is difficult to get out?
Well, that's it. On the one hand, it's difficult to get out of the country. On the other hand, you cannot stay in a big city. I mean, the point comes where when the sewer culture, as the water rises, as the filth rises in the sewer, you have to get out. And as the filth is rising in today's big cities, and as you say, the anti-culture is intruding more and more on my family, on my wife, upon my children, I may just be driven to do whatever it does to get out and try and find a healthy environment for my family.
And I would argue that it's not perhaps as difficult as what it seems, because there are people that are doing it. And if people can do it, if people are doing it, that means that it's possible.
That's a very solid argument. If people are doing it, it can be done. And I say the old English proverb is, where there's a will, there's a way. So if people see the real need to rescue and save and protect their children and their wife, or even maybe their husband, but the husband should take the decision. It's up to him to lead. If a husband sees that this is a serious problem for his family, then that's what he's got to do. A man must do what a man must do, as Americans say. And it may be coming to that, and it may be coming to that sooner rather than later, and for quite a lot of people, I don't know.
Once a family, let's say, moves to the country, it doesn't mean, though, that the battle is over, because in the country you can have all these electronic devices just as easily as you can have in the city.
Well, that's one thing.
How do you think families should handle the problem of how to deal with the media? Because even in prime time now, there's a lot of filth on the TV screens. It used to be that the blue movies were only late at night.
Yeah.
Now they're at prime time.
Yeah. Well, I think that, you know, any father that's serious about saving the souls of his family, I think he cannot let the television under his roof. That's just a simple, very, very simple rule. He can't let that machine in. It's not only the filth. There's a lot else besides the filth that's wrong with that machine. That somebody's well said, even if the programs were angelic, television would produce angelic robots because of its passivity in the machine and so on and so on. So, as for the internet, it may be necessary for a man's work, but he should absolutely be kept under lock and key. And when I say lock and key, I mean lock and key, because it's a very powerful attraction for fallen human nature, especially, let's say, adolescent boys. And if dad isn't very careful, the boys are going to find a way around any block that he tries to put. And he will put blocks, you know, block certain kinds of programs. The children will find the block and work their way around the block. They're little monkeys. So don't let dad think that, you know, that he's got to keep it under a physical, I would say, under a physical lock and key.
So you don't think that children should have internet then?
I don't think so, no. Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
And you would argue, too, then that, that there's something wrong with the media itself. It's not just the bad programs that are on TV.
Definitely. It's because it's passive. Because there's no real interaction with a TV program. Because it's a machine. It's an electronic machine. It's a magic lantern without any real humanity in it. You're not in the presence of a human being. You're in the presence of the electronic representation of human beings, which is not the same thing.
Do you think that's why, then, that sometimes we're raising children that can't interact well with other human beings?
Well, there's no doubt about it. I was saying earlier about the any teacher worth their salt in teaching children can recognize, I think, within a few minutes of beginning to teach, or within a few classes, which of the children in the class have television at home and which don't. The children that have television at home sit there like zombies, whereas the children that are used to interacting with a human being at home and not used to interacting with a machine, they interact with the teacher because they're used to dealing with human beings. There's no doubt that these electronic machines mechanize human beings, turn human beings, not directly into machines, but they make them more like machines. I don't think there's any doubt about that at all.
So, and also attention spans are becoming shorter and shorter. Like, it's a bit, the term soundbite is very famous now, because we're a society of soundbites.
Children don't read, they don't think, they don't talk. They're losing the use of language. They're losing the use of their minds. All they've got is this habit of sitting in front of this machine and letting a constant barrage of images wash through their eyes and through their senses. But the mind doesn't think. The mind is stunned and dazed and crippled by this flood of images.
Now, during the recent culture conference that was held at the Remnant, John Venneri made a very interesting point. He said that bad culture has to be crowded out. In other words, you can't say, let's get rid of the TV and not have something else put in its place. Do you think that's true?
Yes, I think it is true. I think in particular it's true because, again, the problem is structural. You take the structure of a man's life, working in a big city, commuting into a big city to work in an office. He gets up at 7, he rushes down a cup of coffee, he's into his motor car, he's an hour on the road, he then spends his frustrating day pushing papers in an overheated office, neon lit on the 13th floor, whatever it is. He gets into the car again, he drives back in the same frustration. When he gets home, or if he's got a flat in the city, I mean, he may live in a flat in the city, so he commutes by, I don't know, in some other way. But whether he's in the suburb or whether he lives in the city, he's going to be good for nothing in the evening except to watch television. So, because he's punch drunk with frustration and with uselessness. And so the television fills the need in that life. The whole life has got to be changed, or either something else must be given to take the place of television, but what can take its place? The great advantage of television is that it doesn't make any demands upon you. You sit back and you flop back in that comfortable chair like a couch potato, and all you have to do is push with your thumb on the buttons on the remote control. That's all you have to do. Maybe your wife brings you your slippers, maybe she brings you a glass of beer, but yet you don't want to talk to her, you don't want to talk to the children. And yet when he comes back from the office, that's all he's good for. I caricature slightly, I exaggerate slightly, but there's a structural problem in modern life.
But the whole structure then is eroding the Catholic ethos.
I would say definitely yes.
So then really what Catholic families have to do as much as they can is just pull out of that whole structure.
Absolutely. Now that's easily said, it's not so easily done. But the very first thing that a man can do is to start thinking about it. And what Catholic men must do is start thinking. They may think hard, which is what men should be doing, and come to the conclusion that there's not much that they can do. This is the work, they can only work for this company, they're coming close to retirement, I don't know, whatever reasons there may be. They can't change work, they're at an age where they won't easily find another job. For various reasons they can't move, alright. Okay, but if he's done his thinking, he knows that he's got a structural problem in his life and he's got to do something else. He's got to do something else about it, otherwise he's going to lose his soul and his children are going to lose their souls. A man must do what a man must do. And the trouble with a lot of Catholic men today is that they're not men. They're not using their minds, they're not thinking, our Lord said watch and pray. In other words, keep your eyes open and don't fall asleep. But many of these poor men, structurally, it's built into the structure of their lives, that all they want to do is to fall asleep. They want to get up in the morning without having to think about it, drive without thinking about it, go through the day's hard work at the office without thinking about it, come back at home and sit down on the television. They don't want to think. And that's delinquent. That's the road to hell.
Well, I think the culture is encouraging men not to lead because we're fed this propaganda, let's say, that a family is a democracy.
There we are. Well, that's delinquent. That's the new world order at work, to destroy the family. The destruction of the family is a key point of the program of the Freemasons and the globalists and the governors, whoever they are. The destruction of the family is definitely a major part of their program, because they know that the family is a natural unit. God brings people into existence through the family. A human child needs a human family. He needs his own biological dad, and he needs his own biological mum, and he needs the two of them to stay together, and he feels a great sense of injustice if they don't stay together and look after him. And he's quite right. And how does he pay that debt back to his mum and dad? Because he's going to bring up the children the same way. He's got to find a girl with whom he will stay for the rest of his life, and with whom he will bring up their children, in the security of a stable home. That's the way he pays his debt back to his dad. And then, of course, maybe looking after his parents in their old age. That's another point. But in any case, that's the right way to go. And that's what the New World Order is attempting to destroy. And they're doing a very good job. And democracy is the way to do it. The man and the woman are absolutely equal and interchangeable, and the children and the adults are equal and not interchangeable, but they're absolutely equal. The result is, of course, the children govern the parents and the wife governs the husband. Whereas it should be exactly the other way around. The parents should be telling the children what to do. Parents should not say please to their children. They should tell children what to do without saying please.
Well, in the worst case scenarios, I've seen sometimes where the children can become tyrants, where they demand things and they get them.
Of course. And that's absolutely wrong. That's the destruction of the family. And then, of course, the wives don't want to obey the husbands, and the husbands don't know how to make themselves worthy of being obeyed. All of that is being washed away in this, as you say, this democratic propaganda that we're all equal and nobody must tell anybody else what to do, and we're all friends, and parents are friends with their children. But girls don't need another sister in their mother, they need a mother. And boys don't need a friend in their father, they need a father. But the idea now is you've got to be a friend. No, that's not it. Not it at all.
So a father should not try to be the friend of his son or daughter.
No. He should try to be the father. He's got to tell the children what to do. He's got to behave always with respect. He's got to give him. He should behave always to be worthy of being respected by his boys. He should give his boys a good example. He shouldn't mind whether his boys like him or not. Normally, of course, a child should love his mum and dad. But that's less important than the boy being brought up the way the boy should be brought up.
So in other words, respect is more important than being liked.
Yes, surely, yes, for a father. That the boys have an example of male leadership. That's what boys need. That's what they don't get today. They've got all these soft friends, which is not what they want. Sisters don't need a rival in their mother. I mean, girls don't need a mother who looks like an older sister and who will behave like an older sister.
So in other words, let's say mothers can diminish the respect that they gain, let's say, by trying to dress and act like a teenager.
Oh, of course they lose their respect. But then again, it's the men's fault, because the men often want the wife to look like a teenager and to behave like a teenager. And then the women want their menfolk to pretend to be young forever. Oh, it's this great pretense, you know, that we're all of us young, we're all of us, whether we're 15 or 75, we're all of us 20 for the rest of our lives. It's ridiculous. It's degrading. It's absolutely degrading. And it puts a severe pressure upon the women, especially, because then the women have got to try to look as good, be as good looking as teenagers for the rest of their lives. And good looks are given to teenagers by God in order that the teenagers find husbands and wives, but that beauty is not designed to last by God. So men spend today all incredible artificial efforts to maintain the youthful good looks. And they try to look as though they're 25 until they're 95. Ridiculous. And it's degrading. It's a war against nature. Once again, it's a war on nature. It's a pretense that God has got it wrong and we men have got to put it right. And so we spend fabulous sums of plastic surgery, cosmetics, heaven knows what.
Now, Archbishop Lefebvre, did he call for traditional families to move out to the country?
Yes, he did. And he said, you know, the country is a healthy way of life for children. It's a healthy way of life. It teaches discipline. You're closer to God. It brings the family together. He gave, in a few sentences, he gave at least four very good reasons. And he suggested the family should go back to the country, yes. It makes a lot of sense.
Because I think part of the problem is that in the city, the parents don't have enough chores, or they can't give them enough work to do.
I think that's absolutely right. The chores, there's much more to occupy children and occupy them usefully in the country than in the city or in the suburbs. And then you're looking for artificial ways of keeping the children occupied. And that's no substitute for a real way of keeping the children occupied.
Well, the artificial ways are fairly obvious. Then parents, let's say, enroll their children in this sport and in music lessons and in folk dance and whatever activities they can find for them in a desperate attempt to keep them busy.
Yes, I think there's a lot in that. Whereas if the five-year-old girl has to look after the chickens, well, she's got to look after the chickens, and she's got to learn how to look after chickens, and she's got to fulfill her responsibilities. And if she doesn't look after the chickens are going to die or whatever, I don't know. But that, it's surely much easier to find meaningful occupation for children in the country than in the city, yes.
Well, the gardens and the animals are there naturally.
Yes. And the children naturally take to animals. And there's a kinship there.
Now, perhaps, though, families have to do more than simply move into the country, because the country people, too, have been corrupted, let's say, by the bad TV programs. Is it necessary, perhaps, for traditional Catholics to kind of gather together a bit so they can give each other mutual support?
I don't think there's any doubt about it, because a man is not just a familial animal or an animal to live in families. He's a social animal, as Aristotle says. In other words, he's meant to live in, designed to live in a society. And for Catholics to keep the faith, it's best for them to group together in a Catholic society, which has its own problems. I mean, everything has its problems. But Catholic society is the normal way to go for Catholics to group together and help one another as families. One family on its own is not enough.
Isn't the teaching of the Church that a single family by itself is what's called an imperfect society, because it can't supply all its needs?
Yes, that's right. Whereas a group of families in which there are enough families to supply all the needs of all of them, one helping the other, that is a perfect society. Yes, that's what the Church teaches.
But again, that's a skill that has to be relearned. Pioneer society, people kind of work together naturally. But in the city, you're autonomous. Many times you don't even know your next door neighbor. So to get back to a situation where families help each other out, that's something that has to be relearned.
I think that's true. There's a lot that's been lost, but a lot, you know, as it's been lost, so it can be regained. But people have to think clearly about what's been lost and how important it is and why it's been lost, so that they can put it all together again. It can be done, but it takes firstly some hard thinking and by the men. The men have got to think, and the men have got to lead.
Okay, now let's say you have a group of families that have moved out to the country and have moved in enough geographical proximity that they can help each other out. What do you think they should do, let's say, to substitute activities for the TV set that they've, let's say, thrown out?
Well, let's hope they have thrown out the TV set. If they are in the country, I think work on the land. Let Dad get a fork, a hoe, a spade in his hands, and start working on the land again. Create a garden. Create a vegetable garden. Get the children interested in, give the example, get the children interested in planting vegetables and then flowers. Get the girls going on flowers. They love flowers, which is absolutely normal and natural. And get the boys then to get some animals, and get the boys to look after the heavier animals and the girls to look after the lighter animals. That's the direction to go.
So in other words, traditional Catholics, do they have to set up like a counterculture then to the existing culture?
An alternative. They have to. Traditional Catholics have got to save the souls of their children, and they've got to protect the children from this anti-culture, which is, as you say, exerting a severe pressure, which is invasive. and badly structuring the children's lives from school onwards, or from kindergarten onwards, from destructuring the children's lives. So the structure has got to be put, a good structure has got to be put back in the children's lives, and there's much more chance, I would say there's generally more chance of being able to do that, if not much more chance of being able to do that in the country than in the city.
Well, because there's a couple of problems in the city. Number one, the culture is going to overwhelm you there. And secondly, it's hard to get families in any kind of geographical proximity.
Yes, that sounds right. So there's going to be problems in if you group together. I mean, in the United States, it's interesting, in the United States, there have been, ever since, I think, the beginning of the United States, there have been these regular attempts to create communities on the land. And regularly it breaks apart, regularly. But with the Catholic faith, there's much more chance. Of course, supposing that there is the mass available. The mass has got to be available for Catholics with a certain regularity. I don't know exactly what regularity, but the mass is necessary.
In other words, to try to create, let's say, a community in the country without the graces that flow from the mass, that will be probably a futile attempt.
You could say that. I think that's true. Yes, yes, that's true. That's surely true. Because you need the strength of the faith. You need the graces of the sacraments, and you need the ideological strength of the faith to hold the community together.
Now, you mentioned that sometimes these attempts don't work, but on the other hand, I have observed sometimes they do work. For example, it seems that Post Falls, Idaho, or St. Mary's, Kansas, have been successful.
Yes, yes, they've existed now for many years. Each of them has existed for a number of years. It is possible, but it's not easy. And St. Mary's and Post Falls, of course, have their problems. But they both achieved a very great deal in the formation of young people's lives over the last 20, 30 years.
Now, do grandparents play a vital role in building up, let's say, families and these communities?
I would say yes. Again, that's something that's been lost. It's something that's... People don't want death, and they don't want, in the big city way of life, you don't want to think about death, you don't want to think about old age, you don't think about suffering. You will take pills to get rid of suffering, any kind. You will have old people's homes to get old people out of the way, so that you don't have to be reminded of old age, and you will simply not think about death, and you will pretend it doesn't happen, to get death out of the way. Because all of these things come from sin and original sin, and you don't want to be reminded that there's any such thing as sin. You're getting rid of God, and you're getting rid of the sense of sin. So you don't want old age around, and you want to get rid of the old people in the family. But in the old days, the old people were an integral part of the family. In the old days, surely, the two-decker family was the exception, and the three-decker family, the three-generation family, was the rule. And grandparents have a lot to give grandchildren, and grandchildren have a lot to give the grandparents, it's obvious. So grandmother was a built-in babysitter, for instance. Of course, but that's something that's been lost. Grandparents today feel awkward imposing themselves upon their children and their grandchildren. And so grandparents themselves suggest getting sent off to an old people's home in order not to disturb the two-decker family. It's a shame, that's undoubtedly what's happened in many cases, and what it means is that the old people get shoved off into these old homes where they don't see children, and the children miss the wisdom and the experience of the grandparents, and the grandparents miss the life and joy of the little children. It's a great shame.
And sometimes the grandparents themselves contribute to this idea in another way, that they might say, well, now my last child has left home, therefore I'm just going to go down and enjoy the golf courses in Florida now.
Well, that's... That's another angle on it. In fact, here in Minnesota, I know that when the parents get into real difficulties, blessed the children that have grandparents that can take them in. When parents get into difficulty one kind or another, and they don't know how to parent, the children risk being abandoned. The children are very lucky if they have grandparents who will still look after them. Blood is thick and water is thin, but you're quite right. The last thing many grandparents now want is to have to look after grandchildren. It's a shame. The whole way of life has changed in the wrong direction. More and more independence of the generations from one another, more and more equality, more and more independence, more and more liberty. But it's going in the wrong direction. All of those three things, equality, independence, and liberty, mean the destruction of the family. And people need family ties. Human beings need family ties.
Now, you have talked about the fine arts in our discussions. Should the traditional movement be undertaking to encourage good music and the study of good literature or drama?
Yes. And they should be encouraging, where possible, where there is the talent, the creation of new literature, new music, but not of the modern godless way, of the modern godless kind, but somehow literature and music and the arts have got brought to life again. Good literature, good music and good art, it can be brought to life. All it needs is the talent and a community with the faith and the genuine appreciation and understanding and need of music, painting and literature, and those will revive. Those would and will revive.
So let's say one example could be that at a traditional school they could put on a drama production of some classical play or literature.
That's what happens in many traditional schools. And I know, for instance, the Society's School for Girls, Secondary School for Girls in Germany, in Schönenberg. I know the Sister Schwester Michaela is very keen on drama and art and music for the girls in the school. And there the girls, they do drama, music and art, they've got much better chance of turning into good women than trying to go to some wretched university and fill their heads with all the stupid nonsense that the men fill their heads with. Oof.
And do parents have to be vigilant about what music their children listen to?
In my opinion, yes, definitely. Because, it's not an opinion, but it's a part of the duty of parents, yes. Because music is a tremendous form of the soul, for good or for ill. Music can be a very bad influence on the soul, it can be a very good influence on the soul. Our Lord tells us to watch and pray, and parents have got the duty of watching over their children. And they must definitely watch over the music of their children. They should not buy this liberal nonsense that music doesn't matter, that music is only music, and that music doesn't have an enormous influence upon their children's lives. That's nonsense.
So, because quite often, it's through the culture that the family, the traditional family, is now being undermined. Because once the traditional family is out of the Novus Ordo, there's usually not any great desire of the children to go back to it. The modern church, like the late Roman Empire, has kind of lost its power of attraction.
Yes.
But the new culture, as opposed to the new mass, still very much has this power of attraction.
Oh, yes. No, that's right. The new culture appeals to pride because it gives you independence and liberty. It makes you feel that you're God. And it appeals to sensuality because it's very comfortable. It's physically very comfortable. It's very easy and soft physically. So, appealing to pride and sensuality, it's got a real pulling power on our fallen nature. But it doesn't do any good to our fallen nature, so a dad has got to do what he can to keep his children clear of it.
Are clothing styles an important part of the culture?
Yes. The way a person dresses is so... For Aristotle, there are substance, one of the nine accidents. In other words, one of the forms of being of an entity, of somebody who dresses. The clothing is part of the actual being of the person. It's an accident of the actual person, the way a person dresses. Because that's how important clothing is. Aristotle made it an accident in the philosophical sense. So the way a person dresses has a very immediate influence, both on himself or herself, and of course upon those who they live with. The outstanding example is the way that the women dress and how they can influence men for good or ill by the way they dress. That's an obvious example, but it's not only the way the women dress, although it's outstandingly the way the women dress. It's very much a part of the culture.
Now, what are your specific recommendations as to how Catholic men and women should dress?
Well, women, should, wherever reasonably possible, wear a skirt and not trousers. That's very simple. Because a skirt is feminine and trousers are masculine. It's as simple as that. And when women began wearing trousers, it was a great step forward in their losing their femininity. And when the women are not women, they're not going to be mothers. And when women are not mothers, the children, they may have children, but the children won't have mothers.
So in other words, when women wear pants, it blurs the distinction between the male and female genders.
Yes, very much so. It makes women... When a woman gets up in the morning and puts on a skirt or puts on trousers, she feels in two different ways. It affects her psychology right from the very moment. I've been told that by women, and it's common sense. It also affects the men. The men are much more likely to open a door for a woman who has a skirt on than for a woman who has trousers. The mentality of women wearing trousers is that they don't want the door open for them. They don't want to be treated like women. They don't want to be women. They don't want to be treated like women. They want to be exactly just like men. So what it commands to is they want to make themselves into second-class men, because a woman is not designed to be a man. A woman is designed to be a woman, and a man is designed by God to be a man. And the man must be manly and dress in manly fashion and not soft and silly fashion. And the women must be womanly and dress in womanly fashion. And the dress must be quite distinct.
Are public schools an important component of the drive towards an anti-Christian world order?
Definitely. The villains make sure that they get hold of the educational system. That's always been the case. A classic example is the Freemasons at the time of Napoleon getting hold of the universities. And the Freemasons get hold of the music conservatories. They get hold of all of the sources of education in order to poison young people's minds and turn them away from God and away from Jesus Christ. So the public school system today is in the hands of the enemies of God. And the youngsters are submitted in these schools to a tremendous barrage of propaganda, and for instance, in favor of homosexuality, in favor of abortion, in favor of fornication, you name it. And they're very corrupting. So Catholics should be finding it more and more difficult to let their children take part in public schools. Of course, the Catholic schools are hardly better today, and if they're not actually, because they should be much better, and they don't teach not only false doctrine outside of church thing, but they even teach false doctrine directly against the faith. So pagan public schools won't be directly against them, won't teach necessarily directly against the faith, but modern Catholic schools will teach modernism and fill the children's heads with complete nonsense as to their faith.
But the effect then of the public schools will be to undermine the faith, even if they don't teach directly against it.
Yes, definitely. They teach immorality, they promote immorality. Parents have to get, friends have to get permission to get their children out of sex education courses. And then sometimes it's very difficult to get them out. The villains, the governors, capital G, are deliberately using the schools in order to corrupt the youngsters. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
And if that is the situation, is it important for Catholic parents then to make sacrifices to enroll their children into traditional Catholic schools?
Yes, the Catholics always used to make tremendous sacrifices to get Catholic schooling for their children. Today, I think you can say that if all that you've got on the good side is an individual good boy, let's say, or an individual good girl, a good family, Mass on Sunday and catechism, but on the other side you've got all the environment and the school, then the whole environment plus the school, the balance is against, even actually against the children coming through with the faith. But if you've got a good individual, a good family, catechism and Mass and the school, then the balance is in favor of the children keeping the faith. So that the school, whether the school is in the hands of the Catholic Church or not, is liable to tilt the balance for or against the children keeping the faith. But it's difficult, if the children don't get Catholic schooling today, it's difficult for them to keep the faith, even if it's a good family. It's not impossible, but it's difficult. It's really difficult.
Is it important too, let's say for grandparents and single Catholics, to support our traditional Catholic schools?
Yes, it is. Often those that have the money don't have the children, and those that have the children don't have the money. So on the Catholic principle of everybody helping everybody else in the mystical body of Christ, then it's very much to be advised that, and to be encouraged that those Catholics who do have money should support Catholic schools, because Catholic schools are always very expensive. They're a black hole in any budget. You have to pay the staff, you have to pay, especially paying the staff, because you don't have teaching brothers who teach for nothing except board and keep. You now have to pay pay teachers, and the teachers have young families, and the teachers need to live, and they can't live as poor as church mice. There's a tremendous expense involved in running a school. It's always very expensive.
But on the other hand, there's also a great reward, because I've seen many vocations come out of traditional Catholic schools as well.
You can say, I think it's true that in France, the great number of the vocations are coming from our own schools. The vocations to the boy, to the priesthood are coming out of our own boys' schools. I think that's true. And so, without a Catholic education, the vocation is very difficult, because the kids have this, the boys have all of, until just talking about the boys have all of this tremendous weight of counter-propaganda in favor of a godless world order, and the vocation just seems too strange and too unusual and too abnormal to be taken seriously into consideration.
We also have to take a look at where we are going. I think that you have talked many times that modern civilization is headed for a major catastrophe of some kind. Why do you think this?
Because God is not mocked, and because sin has to be paid for. And without the shedding of blood, there's no remission of sin, says St. Paul. So, people today are mocking God. They're treating him like, as I say, a sugar daddy. He's just old and sweet and soft and silly. And so you can tweak his beard and kick him in the shins and do what you like, and he's still going to be nice to you and take you into his heaven. That's complete nonsense. But that's what people think about God. So, they're mocking God. They are, and they're wallowing in sin, sin of pride and independence and sensuality. And therefore, there's a great bill to be paid for, and the blood of our Divine Lord is not being shed upon the altar, anything like enough to pay for the sins that are going on.
So in other words, blood is going to be shed somehow. If it's not being done at the altar, it's going to be done
in
some other way.
If the blood of our Lord is not sufficiently shed upon the altar in the sacrifice of the Mass, then the blood is going to be have to shed in the streets, yes.
So, and that could maybe account for the fact that the murder rate in Western countries is high, yes. And that the Middle East, at least, seems very unstable.
Yes. The instability in the Middle East is surely a sign of things to come. I mean, things could blow up in the Middle East at any time.
Or, Dr. David Allen White has suggested that perhaps the chastisement could take the form of the power going out.
Well, that's a minor form of chastisement, really, although it would be difficult enough for modern life to exist without electricity. But I think the chastisement that's finally coming is going to be much worse than just the going out of the electricity. But what Dr. White is saying is that surely that we are now so dependent upon electricity, we made ourselves so dependent on electricity that if we had to do without it, it would be a serious suffering. I think that's true.
Could that be an argument for moving to the country? Because in the country, it would be easier to live without electricity.
Yes.
Like if you could have a wood stove and so forth.
Yes, it's an argument for going out into the country, surely, yes.
Now, right now, do you think that the evil one is using the culture sort of to sap the strength of committed Christians? But if, let's say, the music stops and we do have a catastrophe of that kind, then maybe the culture wouldn't be as strong a tool. So what form do you think the evil one would use then?
Oh my, we're into using our powers of imagination. The evil one would certainly not give up, the devil would not give up, obviously, pursuing souls. If the electricity went out, he would still come after souls. But if the electricity went out, firstly, you'd have enormous, enormous problems in the big cities. You'd have rioting, and people couldn't survive in the big cities without electricity. So
you'd have civil disorder then?
Surely. Surely. If the electricity went out in any kind of permanent way, surely the big cities would become unlivable, surely. So, I mean, I think you'd have blood in the streets, you'd have mayhem, you'd have chaos in the cities. I'm sure that the governments think about that. And I suspect they don't have an answer.
That the problem has become bigger than they could control in that case.
I think that's it. You were saying earlier that the machines are getting out of control. And I think that's it. I think that's true. That's my guess.
Well, I remember a few years ago, we did have a blackout in the northeastern part of the United States and Canada. Mm. And President Bush said that this is a wake-up call for America. And since then, nothing's been done.
Maybe they've done something to try to interlock the various parts of the country, the electricity in various parts of the country. Maybe they've built one or two more power stations, who knows. But the problem is getting so big that I don't think they can cater for all the eventualities. And God may well start a punishment by the electricity going out. I don't know, it's an interesting thought. And it would, if the electricity went out, people would come back to reality in many ways. They wouldn't be able to watch television, and they'd have to entertain themselves in a real way, with real people. They'd have to entertain one another.
In other words, they'd become real human beings again.
Well, yes, but on the other hand, if there was blood being shed in the streets, they'd be real human beings really killing one another. I mean, it's a difficult scenario. It's a difficult thing to imagine altogether. But the electricity going out wouldn't have only bad effects, but it's difficult to imagine it not having some very serious effects.
Now, do you foresee perhaps there being a persecution of traditional Catholics and even other kinds of Christians?
The powers that be today are already on the trail of what we'll call fundamentalist Christians. In other words, especially the Protestants, there are large numbers of fundamental Protestant Christians, and the powers that be, the New World Order, does not like Christians who take Jesus Christ seriously. It doesn't like people who take their religion seriously. So they're already discrediting the fundamentalists and threatening them. Waco is a little example. Back in 1992, I think it was. And it's very possible that they're already lumping together Catholic traditionalists with Protestant fundamentalists. So it's very possible in one form or another the New World Order is going to come after Catholics, yes.
And in a way, isn't it already doing that? In your country, hasn't there been some kind of government legislation saying that Catholic adoption agencies can't opt out of a provision to encourage homosexual couples from adopting children?
Yeah. I don't know what's going on in England, but England is in a very bad way. Apparently Christianity is now becoming a dirty word. England is becoming very pagan. And post-Christian pagan, which is, it's very bad. That's what I hear. I'm not there very often or for any length of time, so I don't know, but it wouldn't surprise me at all.
But in other words, the enemy sometimes seems to be taking certain aspects of our faith and stigmatizing them and criminalizing them even in some cases.
Yes. Well, they're advancing on the path of getting rid of God. Getting rid of God, getting rid of God's law, equalizing everything, permitting everything, bringing in a police state to hold this crazy and chaotic society still together. Otherwise, there'd be nothing to hold it together at all.
But one way or the other, you seem to be indicating that there's going to be hard times ahead. We don't know what form it'll take. It could be a persecution, it could be a war, it could be hard economic times, it could be the power going out.
There's a huge bill to be paid, and somehow, somewhere, it's got to be paid. We are gravely offending God as a society, as the nations, as a society of nations. We are gravely offending God all over the world, more and more, day by day. It's got to be paid for. God is not mocked. And in Akita in Japan in 1973, Our Lady said that unless men repent and amend their ways, there's going to come a punishment worse than the deluge, the flood in the time of Noah.
Now, how should Catholics prepare themselves for such a chastisement?
Pray, duty of state, and prayer. And when one says prayer, one doesn't mean some kind of anything exaggerated or anything extraordinary or anything unusual, but just steady daily prayer.
So in other words, just do our daily duty.
Yes, that's exactly what Pius X said.
And do you think that Catholics should avoid the temptation maybe to make their lives too easy?
Yes, it all depends. I mean, if it's easy sinful, obviously they should avoid it. If it's easy New World Order, again, that's implicitly sinful, that's leading away from God, and they should avoid it. But difficulty is not to be sought for its own sake unless there's a clear spiritual or moral advantage. Difficulty in itself is not, just in it as such, is not good. It's what difficulty generates, what the character it can build, if it's the right kind of difficulty.
Or maybe we should be doing some voluntary penances, like perhaps fasting during Lent or going on one of these pilgrimages.
Catholics have always fasted during Lent. And Catholics today, these pilgrimages are springing up all over, I think it's good to say. Wherever you have Catholics with the faith, they are making these pilgrimages on foot to the various shrines all over the world, I do believe.
Now, we have painted quite a black picture, but on the other hand, we have just alluded to some signs of hope that you say quite correctly that throughout the world, these pilgrimages are being revived.
Well, the faith is being, and the way of life of the faith is being upheld amongst the traditional Catholics and amongst some mainstream Catholics. And amongst the mainstream Catholics, a real sign of hope is this return of interest in the true right of mass, in the true mass. And it's on the part of the priests, especially the young priests, and it's also on the part of the laity. So there are definite signs of hope.
Well, I do notice, let's say, here in North America, in Canada, in the United States, there are a lot of souls finding their way to tradition.
Yes.
So God's grace is still continuing to work, even if there is kind of this system that pulls people away from it.
God is giving the grace necessary to sustain the remnant, I think that's true to say. And therefore, you know, not everything is hopeless or lost or done for. But the situation is grave, and it's going to get graver. So the Catholics have got to pull themselves together, and they've got to realize, again, I say the men have got to think about what's going on, and they've got to think about just how serious it is, and what it requires of them as family fathers and as men.
Thank you, Your Excellency, for taking part in these interviews.
My pleasure.